Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
We've now got 10, 15 minutes or so for questions and comments. So, again, I dare say that much of the two presentations will have stimulated thoughts and so on. So please feel free to ask some questions and so on of the speakers. So hopefully there'll be some thoughts from the audience or not. Yes, if you just wait for the just so that the people listening in all the different corners of the country can hear. If you're able to stand up, James, when the microphone comes, thanks.
James Kennedy, University of Warwick. There's some very interesting figures, particularly coming out from iGraduate, but also the surveys done by NUS. However, these are largely surveys, and only those who choose to complete the survey do we actually find out what their opinions are. Have either iGraduate or NUS, or indeed anybody else, considered doing any research that will get a truly representative sample of what international students are thinking?
Cool. Thank you, James. I have to say, yes, I would love to conduct a survey of non-respondents. And, of course, the challenge is to work out just how representative those views are. What we have seen in our work together at Warwick and elsewhere is that the barometer process, at least if I take that as an example, is a deliberately light-touch exercise. It's not intended to make every student say what they think. It's intended to give every student a voice. And what we have found is that whether your response rates are 20%, 30%, 40% or 50%, that what you're able to do, first of all, is compare against the profile, compare the profile of respondents and say, well, okay, how representative is that in terms of nationalities, level of study, field of study, funding, gender and everything else? And certainly at the national level, we found that we're within 1 or 2 percentage points against every major nationality and against levels of study and so on. So it's a representative enough indicator at the national level in the UK, and it's typically highly representative at a university level, but where it isn't, you're able to pinpoint that too and say, for some reason, we're underrepresented from the business school. Why is that? Or is there an issue with our Indian students who don't seem to be engaging with this process in other countries? We've run the process in Chinese for Chinese students, recognising that they're evidently very capable in English to be studying in English, but many students would often prefer to answer in their own language. So there are things you can do to address that engagement. It's really looking at the data and understanding where are we managing to connect with people and where are we not. But also, I think, what we've seen over time, as this process has run across 5 or 6 years, we have been able to see the impact of changes on student perceptions. So whether it's as basic as a new library building going up or an adjustment to our policy on accommodation provision, that you can see the impact of that. So it's evidently proved itself, this type of process, to be a very sensitive indicator.
And Christina, do you want to offer a comment in terms of both the ease but also the challenges that there are of engaging international students either in, you know, formal activities of NUS, but also more generally in students' unions, whether that's not just their sort of surveying. I suppose the challenge remains, you know, getting them involved in the broader activity of the students' union as well.
Well, I think in NUS, our position is we would really like, you know, institution to try to give more support to their student union on international student or internationalization related, you know, areas. So probably what we say is we would like to see a dedicated international student officer, or in my own word, I would prefer use global student officer rather than international, because it does segregate UK students from getting involved. So maybe ensure that position is created, and if you happen to have some small pocket of money, maybe 20K, maybe give that to your student union and ensure they have a dedicated, full-time, global student officer. You'll find out, actually, your life will be a lot easier, because generally they're really, really enthusiastic. They really want to get things done, not only for you, but also, you know, for the student union. So probably that's something to consider. And another thing, what we find out is you will find, you know, try to make change in university and in college through its normal hierarchy takes very long time. And correct me if I'm wrong, I was told academic professor can't be easily persuaded, or it's pretty much mission impossible. Maybe that's true. And it's very likely you will find much easier to engage students who are just generally so innocently enthusiastic. They just want to get things done. They want to learn because they are new. Where, you know, if you want to get some academic stuff, getting done, it just takes ages.
Yes, we've got a question here, if you wouldn't mind standing up.
Yes, I've got a question and a comment. Francesca Sartori.
Where are you from? Sorry.
Cardiff University. Thank Francesca Sartori. I've got a question for Will. Thanks for the figures. They seemed very, very positive, not just for the UK. And I wanted to ask you whether... one thing I found at Cardiff, and specifically my school, is that students are becoming increasingly strategic when filling in this type of surveys. So whether and how you factor in this type of strategic approaches by students.
Just to be clear, in terms of being strategic when filling out a survey, is that the feeling that it's important to rate generously the institution because it reflects on the institution?
It reflects on themselves as well and their curriculum experience and so on.
Right. Okay.
So this was the question. The other thing, I wanted to thank Christina to, you know, the ideas, but also I think to unveil the elephant in the room, which I think has been there also in the morning earlier, and we didn't really address that, which is, having worked in higher education, not just in the UK, I feel that the crux here is that in the UK we've got probably the most dynamic cohort of international students. So a huge number of international students with experience, the will to go abroad and learn. But we've also got probably the most homebound cohort of home students, because it seems to me British students don't travel much for their studies, for their work experience, and don't even conceive that this might be a good idea. So thank you for, you know, unveiling this.
Any additional questions from the floor? Well, please do keep. Yes, the gentleman there. I will pass those questions on. If you could tell us who you
are. Hi, Fabrizio Trifiro from the QA. Yes. A question for Will. I'm particularly interested in the Tini student barometer, and I was wondering how UK institutions and their partners are engaging with this initiative.
I think that would be very interesting, given a whole range of things. Will, do you want to pick up the issue of strategic answering, perhaps, of surveys, and also that second issue on TNE?
Yes, of course. So if I address that first point around strategic answering of questions, I assume that what you're referring to is the tendency, when there's any institutional survey that's nationally published in the way that the National Student Survey is, the students are smart enough to work out what the right answer is to a question, that it doesn't make much sense to criticise your institution if you're going to be reading about that in The Independent or The Sunday Times a few months later. And I do think that that's the fundamental disagreement that I have with nationally published survey data, that while there is this hunger for there's this pursuit of transparency that drives governments to publish every piece of data and to insist that institutions typically publish and disclose all their data. We took a very different position from the earliest stages of our work and decided we would not publish institution-specific data, at least in the barometer process. If an institution wants to do something with the information, they can with the feedback from the students, and we obviously hope they do in terms of making things change. But we have never fed any of our information into a national or international league table for that specific reason, that I think I'm interested in how to create an effective and sustained dialogue between individuals, stakeholders in institutions, to enable institutions to make better decisions to enhance their provision. I'm not interested in selling newspapers. And I equally think that there is a fundamental flaw in those kind of national statutory reporting processes. So there is a concern that students may be trying to work out what is happening with the data, we found increasingly, interesting point, in 24 countries, whenever we've worked with the first discussions with the government, they will say, because we want to know who are our bad universities. And we will say, well, that's unfortunately not us you want to speak to, then speak to somebody else. But if you want to know how your national provision compares and for your institutions to know how they perform, then we can work together. And so there has been, even in the countries where you would least expect it, we found a willingness of governments to recognise there is a value in that process, and that actually, without the support of the institutions, any nationally imposed survey will have its limitations. So Having said that, I'm not saying that there isn't a value of some kind in those public reporting, but there's a big difference between the mainstream focus of our activity and the purpose of it and those kind of externally published reports.
Yes, Christine, do you want to pick up the issue? I know you're a big advocate of encouraging UK students to go abroad, but you know you're also aware of some of the big barriers there are in that. You know, have you seen any progress in that area? I mean, if I remember correctly, Scotland is a great deal more successful of the four countries in the UK at encouraging its students to go abroad and any good initiatives and so on.
I think when we generally say, you know, UK students are reluctant to go overseas because of culture, I would say, you know, sometimes the most impossible things is actually the most possible things. I know it's a little bit weird, you know, logic, but actually, let me try to explain it in this way. We always say UK students don't want to go overseas because they don't have the language to, you know, travel. But we know everyone speaks English now, so that's not, you know, a good excuse. I mean, if they go to any place in the world, I mean, they pretty much can just find quite comfortable, just be there. I think the key issue is about perceived barriers. And there are a lot of perceived barriers out there. And for example, language is one, finance is one. And what else? I think there are a lot of issues about, you know, losing their friends, you know. So when we're talking about mobility, why we are always talking about individual-based mobility rather than talking about group mobility? Say you got like a class of 40 students. If one of them chose to go to study in another country for 1 year, when he comes back, all the friends will be gone. And he will feel as if, you know, I have to go into an entirely new environment and it takes time to, you know, integrate, to try to, you know, settle down. That sort of fear, you know, it does put them off. And also another thing is, you know, when we're talking about mobility, if we get one student going overseas for half year or 1 year, we don't get their boyfriend or girlfriend going with them. Are you trying to, you know, create some barrier for their romantic relationship, which lots of, you know, students will be very unwilling to do? So what I'm proposing is we need to do couple mobility. We need to do group mobility. And let's be a little bit tough on that. Let's make it compulsory. I know in Warwick, probably next year, or maybe you're already doing lots of, you know, mobility, but not sure it's compulsory or not. You see, so probably we need to create more places to ensure it can potentially become compulsory.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Christina. Will?
Very briefly, I know everybody's waiting for lunch now. This question of transnational student experience and offshore experience and how do you track that. Clearly, for distance learners, it is your community, and that's a straightforward group where your dialogue should be a day-to-day dialogue, and it's relatively straightforward to include them in a survey process as long as you analyse them separately and understand that it's comparing against other distance learners and making a relevant comparison, but a distinction between distance and onshore provision. But transnational, though, in terms of offshore partnerships and so on, some institutions will simply say they will contact their students, but most aren't able to. Actually, most of us aren't in direct contact with those students. And so the key to it is there's a kind of hearts and minds campaign with partner institutions, and we've seen that led by people like Taylor's and Help in Malaysia, by the Singapore institutions, now in Hong Kong and in other countries where the institutions themselves have said, we want to run a process like this so that we know how our student experience compares so we can report that back to our partner. And so what I would encourage you to do is to work with us to encourage those institutions to take part, because it's really through their students telling them what they think, but then being able to share that data that you get the best outcome rather than trying to impose something on partners from a height.
Just before we head to lunch, are there any really final, burning, pressing questions or comments? We could squeeze one in ever so quickly. No, we've got one at the front. We'll go very quickly. So if you just wait for the microphone. Sorry. That's all right.
James Clark again from London College of Fashion. The only thing I would say is, do we ever the research that has been presented, which is very interesting, I'm very new to higher education, is looking very much at feedback what was the student experience? Do we ever feed forward and look at expectation and then compare the two?
I know you sort of talked about closing the feedback loop. Well, if you want to briefly...
Absolutely, yes. It is half of the job, by the way. Much of what we've been discussing here is student satisfaction, but that's only half of the job. Half of it is student expectation. It's exactly that. So it's understanding what are the expectations, where are and how do we manage those and how do we match them. So it's part of the core process, I think, and also with prospective students too. Thank you for picking that point up.
Yeah, great. We are going to have to pause there. Again, if we could thank both our speakers for their excellent presentations.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.